Sorry.
Okay. The House Committee on Education will come to order. Welcome to the Education Committee. We are going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2871. And Representative Barker and Paloma Sparks, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I'm Jeff Barker, representing House District 28. That includes a portion of Beaverton and Aloha. Thank you for your time. I'll try to be brief because I need to get back to the Judiciary Committee. House Bill 2871 is a small technical fix. Current law states that Oregon school districts may contact the Department of Motor Vehicles to notify the department that a high school student has been suspended or expelled. The DMV then charges the student a $75 fee when they apply for their driver's permit or license. The idea being that it is an added incentive for academic performance and acceptable attendance behavior. As Ms. Sparks from ODOT will tell you, however, only a handful of Oregon school districts do notify the department when this happens. The Beaverton School District happens to be one. That's fine, and I support the district's policy. However, I believe that a constituent of mine has been confronted with a situation that is inconsistent with the spirit of the law. David Belmonte, a 21-year-old graduate of Beaverton High School, went to the DMV late last year to apply for his driver's permit for the first time. He was asked to pay a $75 reinstatement fee. Due to a developmental disability, he and his parents felt that he was unready for a permit before then. Because Mr. Belmonte missed a lot of school during an illness he had as a teenager, he had been suspended and the district had notified the DMV. Even though the missed days from school had been many years ago, and even though Mr. Belmonte had subsequently graduated from high school, he was asked to pay a $75 reinstatement fee before he could be issued a driver's permit. In doing so, the DMV was applying the letter of the law, but I do not believe this is the spirit of the law. Thus, I submitted House Bill 2871. The bill makes a small change in this policy. Simply, it says that an individual will not be asked to pay a reinstatement fee when they have already graduated from high school. The individual will be required to show proof of either a high school diploma or a GED. I provided written testimony from the Beaverton School District in support of the minor change. Thank you for your time and for hearing the bill.
Thank you. Paloma.
Thank you. I'm Paloma Sparks from the Department of Transportation, and I'm here to tell you that we are neutral on this bill. Over the past 2 years, only about 50 students per year are suspended under the school board notification program, and the bill merely requests that we waive the $75 fee when a student presents proof of graduation or having obtained their GED.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Ms. Sparks or Representative Barker?
Thatcher.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I just had a question. The student you were talking about, how old was he, she?
Well, he was a high school student. And
he
then
was a student at the time.
And then, when they suspended him, so then he lost his privilege, which he, according to the father, wasn't even really aware of because he didn't even apply until he was 21 for a license or for a permit. And at that time, he was told, well, you had been suspended, therefore you have to pay
$75. But so anybody who hadn't been reported to the DMV and they're 21 and maybe didn't graduate from college or high school would be asked the same thing, or is it only those that got reported?
Only those who were reported and the license was privileges were suspended at the request of the school district.
Wow. But he's 21.
He's 21.
Oh, okay.
And he graduated
amazing.
From high school, so his dad called me and, they were really upset because it was a surprise to them.
Mm-hmm. Representative Van Orman, did you have a question?
Yes, I do, I guess. Thank you, Chair Tom. I forgot. I'm
an that is an honor. That is an honor.
It's Monday. Representative Barker, having never agreed with this policy, a law statute that we passed in the first place, I'm curious why we just aren't asking to get that removed as opposed to waiving
the The school districts have the policy. I wasn't, I was trying to fix
it. But it was based on statute, right?
Right, it is. It is in statute.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, I'm just trying to fix it for somebody who has later completed high school, that therefore the DMV would waive the reinstatement fee.
And I apologize because it's really a rhetorical question.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe in the same bill that this references for the school boards, that you can also remove it because they were caught drinking at school, underage drinking can also get it removed. This bill wouldn't change that. They would still pay the reinstatement fee or not?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, this is just for attendance.
Just for the attendance portion. Okay.
Thank you. Any further questions for this panel? Thank you.
Thank you
very
much for your time.
Thank you.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Grubin, would you yield for a question?
I would.
I'm just kind of curious. So what, you mentioned the drinking part. What is the reason behind the statute then? What is it supposed to? Because Representative Barker intimated that it was maybe something to incent kids to stay in school. But
it has a number of parts, drug and other kinds of use, in and out of school, if you're doing it underage, can have it revoked, and it can be revoked by the court, or it can be revoked by the school. If we knew about it, we could request that. Tennis was another one, and these are issues that all are, I think everybody wants to deal with. And if you look at the statutes under attendance, there's not a lot that schools can do to get people to come back to school. So one of the issues in this particular one was to say it is a privilege to have a driver's license, and therefore if you choose to skip school and do all this kind of stuff, we're going to have the option to revoke your ability to get that license until you get a little older. And hopefully that kept people in school. So that was a part of it as well.
Okay, thank you. The background just helps put it in context.
Thank you. Any further questions?
It's been around for a while.
Colleagues, we have this posted for a work session. What's your pleasure? Are people ready to work this bill today?
Sure.
Yeah.
Are people
sure.
comfortable with doing that? All right, then I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2871 and open a work session on House Bill 2871. Is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2871 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Dimbrough moves House Bill 2871 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Roblin.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just would like to say I think that when people turn around and follow up and get a high school diploma or follow up and get a GED and do the right thing after they've made a problem or made a decision in their life that wasn't helping them, and they turn around, I think anything we can do to incent that and tell them that we appreciate it is a good thing, and I think that makes this bill appropriate for those kinds of situations.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
Excused.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kong?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Van Orman?
Aye.
Representative Dimbrough?
Aye.
Representative Springer?
Excused.
And Chair Gilger?
Aye. Having received the required votes, the motion passes. The sponsor of the bill, Representative Barker, had requested that this bill go on the consent calendar. Are people comfortable with that? Okay, so we will put it on the consent calendar. And I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2871 and open a work session on House Bill 2111. Colleagues, this is the bill that we heard last week that abolished the public charter school development fund. And again, we learned that this would not, it's an empty fund. There's no money in it right now. And we held it over to this week so that we could get a letter from the speaker rescinding the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2111 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Dimbrough moves that House Bill 2111 to the floor with the due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion?
The speaker did give you a letter.
Yes, I do have. I do have a letter from the speaker.
That's a good thing. I just want to make sure. That
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
Representative Springer brought something up this morning, so I just wanted to make it clear because he didn't come up to testify. But last Friday, when that
yes.
day we had, Mark Jeffrey, superintendent of Paisley School, who is kind of the he's very key in charter schools throughout the state, and he had talked to Morgan Allen about this and was very comfortable that it was that there was no problem. So from the charter school perspective, I just wanted to make sure it was on the record that they were comfortable with what was being done here.
Thank you very much. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Debbie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
Excused.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Kamp?
Aye.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher? Representative Van Orman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Denbrough?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Excused.
And Chair Gilzer?
Aye. Having received the required votes, the motion passes and is sent to the floor. Who would like to carry? I think this one should be carried because it has the word abolish and charter school in it.
Okay.
Representative Van Orman? Sure. So Representative Van Orman will carry the bill. And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2111. Oh, excellent. And we now have an informational hearing about raising academic standards and Oregon diploma requirements, unless anyone would like to make a motion before I do that. Representative Maurer.
I request that we suspend the rules and permit Representative Springer to vote on House Bills 2871 and House Bill 2111.
So Representative Maurer moves that the rules be suspended so that Representative Springer can vote. Is there any objection?
Madam Chair, just so Representative Springer knows that they both were unanimous aye votes.
Oh, am I voting?
Yes. So House Bill 2871.
Aye.
And House Bill 2111.
Aye. And thank you.
Thank you. So Representative Springer has voted, and I'm closing the suspended rules portion of the hearing. And opening an informational hearing on raising academic standards and Oregon diploma requirements. We have some visitors from Achieve, Inc. who are here, and Mr. Dennis. Welcome.
This is up to you.
Welcome, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ed Dennis, for the record, Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction. Christine Tell is on her way. She's the other half of our Achieve team. We just left a meeting in Portland with the Oregonian Editorial Board, and I think perhaps we may have gone slightly faster than she did, or we found our way out of Portland sooner. She'll join us in just a few minutes. We're excited to have Achieve here today, meeting with you and some others, as we look for resources and support and fellowship on our diploma work. We found it in Achieve and in the community that they've provided. I've gone myself, as has Superintendent Castillo, members of our board, and others back for a couple of national events. It's quite remarkable, as you all know, what you can learn when you sit down and work with your colleagues, try to avoid some of the mistakes that they've made, and learn how to move forward in a coherent way, and we do that together. Achieve doesn't have the most glowing report on Oregon's progress, but it is a significant report nonetheless. It shows where we're making progress, and it shows where we're ahead of the curve as far as other states are going. I'm going to turn it over to Mark and Christine when she gets here, because they've got a very powerful presentation, but it is about 30 slides long, so they can go through it quickly. I would strongly encourage you to ask questions as you have them. If there's something that there's language they're using that is not familiar with you, please ask for clarification. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ed. Again, my name is Mark Fraser, and I represent Achieve as a senior policy associate, and I'm joined by Christine Tell. We're delighted to be with you today, Madam Chair, members of the committee. And as Ed referenced, there are a lot of slides. We're going to go through them very quickly so that we can concentrate where you're most interested. But perhaps I could give just a moment of introduction to Achieve and some context that might be valuable. Achieve was founded in 1996 following the or 1986, excuse me, following the National Education Summit. It is a bipartisan organization that is made up of six governors and six CEOs, and the governors, three are Republican, three are Democrat, and that's by design. And we have had the pleasure of working with states over the past 15 years or so to help them make education more relevant and rigorous than it's been before in light of the changing world that we find ourselves in. And to that end, in 2005, the American Diploma Project was formed, and Oregon was an early joiner of that network. And it involves having standards and curriculum and assessments and accountability that are all aligned to the skills and knowledge students need to succeed in careers and post-secondary education. So with that, why don't I just very quickly go through these slides for you. And I'm going to actually skip a couple of them because I just think we don't have quite enough time. But this point to relevance is one that I would make, that students sometimes have the rude awakening of discovering that they didn't have the course material that they need when they get to post-secondary and they find themselves in remedial classes. Lots of them say they would have taken those courses had they known better. We can see that there is an expectations gap between what employers and colleges expect and what students are getting in school. And we have copies of this presentation for you, and I, again, apologize for the pace at which I'm going to go through this, but we want to make sure that we have time to talk where you'd like to. Internationally, I think these facts are well known, that the United States does not perform where it needs to be, and I think, in fact, where people sometimes think it is. We're pretty far down on the list of industrialized nations in performance in math. This is from PISA. It's a test of 15-year-olds and what they know and can do in math, and you can see we're 24th out of 30 nations that were sampled. So the American Diploma Project Network, as I said, is something that grew out of recognition of the need to move the needle on achievement for all students. It started in 2005 with just a couple of states coming forward with the idea. Again, Oregon was an early contributor. Now there are 34 states that have signed on to the agenda around standards, curriculum, assessments, and accountability. That covers 85% of the nation's students. So right now, 23 states have aligned their math and English language arts standards with the skills and knowledge needed to begin credit-bearing work in post-secondary institutions. Oregon is one of 21 states that are in the process of aligning the standards, and that work, I think, has pretty far progressed in math and is underway in science, as I understand it. There are a number of things that we would offer as observations or cautions that as Oregon continues to move forward, make sure that the sectors are deeply engaged, the business sector, the post-secondary sector, as well as K-12, to ensure that there's a clear definition of the skills and knowledge that are needed. I'm not going to read through all of these, but basically you want to make sure that all the stakeholders that need to be involved are involved. I'm going to keep going here. 20 states, including and Washington, D.C., require a college and ready diploma. That means students have to demonstrate proficiency before they can move on to out of high school. 8 states are in the process of planning to do so. Now, Oregon, we would say this about Oregon's proposal. We would say that you are very clearly headed in the right direction by increasing the expectations in English and in math and in science. You are doing the work that most states are aware they need to do. I'd say you're right in the middle of the pack in terms of the level of rigor you're expecting. It's certainly not too much, but you're definitely in the game. I think you have some very specific opportunities in this state with respect to your data system. You're one of 12 states that has a data system that can link K-12 with post-secondary. There's a lot of opportunity there. You have some innovative things that you're implementing, like credit by proficiency. And you have, I think, unified leadership and communications, such as will take place with the summit tomorrow. Those are real benefits to moving forward, and relative to other states, you're very strong in that way. Yeah, so this one, moving from 2 to 3 credits in math, it puts you, so that 23 states have less rigorous requirements. It puts you squarely in the company of several states like Virginia and Idaho, Maryland, Utah. You can see them there. It is... these states, particularly Virginia, has done a good job of creating tools to ensure that students succeed. And one of the points that we've been in conversation with Ed and his team about is making sure that the tools are there for teachers to work with so that students learn the content well. And we can talk in greater depth about any of these things, but we'd go through quickly. The caution is to make sure that all students have access to the content, not just students who happen to be in a district that wants to push the needle further. These are national data. These are not drawn from Oregon. But the bottom line is that states that are raising rigor need to take extra steps to ensure that all students have access and are not failing to have access to the content. Okay, let me talk about assessments. There are 10 states right now that administer assessments that are aligned with college and work-ready expectations. Of those states that do, some use them for college placement decisions. This is really the test of alignment, if you will, that if post-secondary says yes, a student can begin credit-bearing work because they've performed well on a state assessment, that's it, alignment in practice. States have different approaches to assessments. Some are more focused on end of course. As you know, in Oregon, you have a comprehensive assessment. There are pros and cons to end of course and comprehensive assessments both ways. But I think
Representative Comp.
He could have finished his sentence, but it's okay. Do you have statistics from the states that have comprehensive high school assessments, if they have increased dropout rates or if it stays about the same? Or
well, I would invite my colleague Christine to speak to this as well, but my understanding is that the data show that actually, in Washington State, for example, I know for sure that graduation rates actually have increased with the implementation of a 10th grade graduation requirement, because it's driven greater, I think, focus and participation. So that's been actually a pleasant effect. Mm-hmm. And my understanding of the national data is that it has not increased dropout rates the way folks have been concerned that it would.
Thank you.
Oregon's in the process of aligning, I think, the assessment system with the college-ready standards. There's a lot of words on this slide, but basically, I think we'll just... One of the cautionary notes... things to keep an eye on is to make sure that the test is measuring the full range of skills and knowledge students will need in order to succeed. Sometimes placement assessments, for example, that colleges use can be very narrow. They don't cover the full scope that your standards in K-12 do. Again, Oregon's one of only 12 states that have a P-20 longitudinal data system, and this is a real opportunity. I think it is a resource that will enable you as you implement your new diploma requirements to see when we talk about two courses above Algebra 1, what exactly are we talking about, and is the consistency of content and quality there? You're going to be able to see that and track that with individual students. And there's obviously a lot of other things you can do that will be important as you implement the proposal. 37 states aspire to be where you are and are working on it, so you're well ahead in this area. So in sum, we would say that our observation is that Oregon is headed in the right direction, that you have a lot of the right work in process. You have, as I said, the data system and other innovative things in place, such as credit by proficiency. You've got leadership that's, I think, putting a shoulder to the wheel to, even in a tough time right now, move the diploma proposal forward. We applaud that. We do agree with Secretary Duncan and President Obama and others who believe that education is an investment, that it's not a matter of waiting, that now is the time to move forward. With the clarity of content that's going to be needed, with the student access to that content, and with the tools to ensure the content is administered well. And that's connecting the dots, if you will, between all the things that exist, but there needs to be a certainty that those dots are being connected well so that students have access to the content. So with that, why don't I invite my colleague Christine Tell to chime in on a couple points, and then let's have a discussion.
Thank you. Before you start, if you have a cell phone, if you could please turn it not just to silent, but all the way off. It interferes with the with the recording system. Thank you. Unless you're a presenter, then.
My apologies.
We were hurried coming to morning. So while Christine is doing that, I would invite any questions.
Representative Dimbro.
I have a question about the math requirement, you know, which, and we'll probably go on to talk more about that. That is seems to be the crux of the obstacles that implementations of the reforms are facing. But you know, when I was in high school, the sequence of courses was Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, and then Pre-Calc and Calculus. So you're saying that 3 years, 2 years beyond Algebra 1 would only take you to Geometry. Could you explain that, or did I misunderstand?
Well, since you've heard a lot from me, why don't I invite Christine to respond to
Thank
that?
Thank you.
Achieve excuse me, the 23 states.
Can you please identify yourself for the record?
Sorry,
thank
Christine
you.
Tell, Senior Policy Associate for Achieve, Washington, D.C. The 23 states that are ahead of Oregon, if you will, or require more mathematics, specifically name courses through Algebra 2, or they name courses through integrated mathematics, level 3. Many of those states require 4 years. So Achieve, not knowing whether or not Oregon intends that the courses be, it says Algebra 1 or higher, that doesn't necessarily stipulate it that it would be an Algebra 2 course. Districts may offer other kinds of options, we would imagine, but we weren't clear that the way Oregon's requirement stands, that it did stipulate content through Algebra 2.
Can I follow up? Yes. I mean, as I, you know, as I understand the discussion over the new diploma here in the state, the goal was not necessarily to go to Algebra 2, but to go to something that would be analogous to Algebra 2, and it may be delivered in a, you know, in an integrated fashion of, you know, through applied math using vocational education, so, you know, something like that. But the skills that the student would emerge with would be analogous to those that a student would have in Algebra 2, even though the content might be different and certainly it would be applied in a different way. Ed can probably speak to that.
Chair Gelzer, Representative Dimbro, Ed Dennis for the record. I think you describe it well. I will say also for the record that Oregon has made a conscious choice to not, we're not it, within the math realm, we're not shooting to crack that top 20, those top 20 states. We are undershooting as making a conscious decision to do that. We're not saying you're going to have to know Algebra 2 in and out. Now, our current standard, that it's a proficiency-based standard, not a course-based standard for us, and that's something we're doing a little differently than most states, although some states are doing it, and others are very interested in how we in Rhode Island and others are doing it, is to say, here's the bar, and our bar right now, the bar we've set right now, does include some Algebra 2 concepts, but it's to provide more flexibility at the local level to figure out how you get there, how you learn those concepts.
Representative Rublin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, because I had a similar question. I look at these states that have these standards, and are they checking the standards within the course they call Algebra 2? Because I have seen Algebra 2 at a lot of different levels. If I look at the textbooks that are out there to buy, if I look at other things, and I was a math teacher. So, I mean, one school district calls Algebra 2, another school district would not call Algebra 2. It's true also of some of the other courses, geometry. Depending on if you're a pure math person or not, what we teach in geometry wouldn't be considered geometry in, as it was in others. So are they, and when you just list the concepts that are covered, the depth of the concepts is just as important as the concepts listed, because I can cover things and not really cover them. So I wonder about ACHIEVE with regard to how do they look at those standards. If they just call it Algebra 2, is that all they have to do? And so how do we make sure that the concepts are covered and in depth enough that they could actually transfer the knowledge of doing the problem in a textbook to other venues?
Excellent point, Representative Roblin. And there are two parts to that. I think the first is that many states, Mark gave the example of Virginia, many states are creating model course sequences so that one understands what, so that hopefully there is some consistency across the state in the actual standards and proficiencies that must be demonstrated. So that's one key point. In the case of Virginia, which has graduation requirements similar to Oregon, the bridge course that was created addresses algebra as well as statistics and data in an applied kind of a way, so that translates better to the classroom. Second point is these states are very consciously connecting assessment with the demonstration of proficiency in algebra, so to ensure that that content is taught. And there is a partnership now of 14 states that have together developed an end-of-course Algebra 2 test and are now developing an Algebra 1 assessment as well. So the alignment with assessment is as important, or perhaps more important, than the content one says is in the Algebra 2 course.
Follow up. And I agree. I mean, it is always the assessment. I mean, that determines what the people actually teach to. So if assessment programs leave out whole sections of what we traditionally called Algebra 2, it won't take long for people to realize what you're really asking for them to teach if you set the standard or tell them
right
what the achievement is going to be. So I appreciate that answer.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Miller?
I apologize. How does our adaptive assessment, the bill that we passed several weeks ago, interface with what we're talking about here? Because and I agree, you have to, assessments are really absolutely critical. But if we're not testing the right thing, and I think this adaptive assessment process, which I don't know if you're familiar with.
Not with your proposal.
Anyway, I wish we had someone here, because I think it's really important about...
Representative Plump might have something to add on that. The adaptive system has been done through research scientists at NWEA, and they use the national standards for the math. That's what they're aligned with.
But it's not tied in with what this is, with ACHIEVE at all.
Well, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Moore, Oregon currently has an adaptive assessment system. It's unique among the country in that students get three opportunities over a nine-month period if a district chooses to use that many opportunities. And it's well calibrated to our standards, which include some Algebra 2 concepts, but it's not quite as rigorous as those 13 states that are developing everything together. They've been working for a couple of years now, and their assessments are, they're using the same assessments. So we're not quite as rigorous, if you will, there, but we're very well calibrated. We were just reviewed by a third-party validator that came in and accredited everything with our assessment system, which is adaptive already, with our standards, which are, frankly, just a little bit lower than the 20 states that are sort of leading the pack here with ACHIEVE.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gelser. Representative Comp, isn't the adaptive assessment that we're talking about a teacher tool useful for teachers, whereas what we're talking about here is end result?
We are talking about two different mechanisms for assessment, and the state one, as the assistant superintendent has shared, is an adaptive test that is very well aligned, and the other one can be used to do the same thing, but it does have teaching tools and lesson suggestions for strengths and weaknesses to enhance learning.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions?
I'm sorry, may I?
Of course.
Okay. It seems to me, I understand we have state standards, but in areas of like math, you know, the hard sciences, it seems almost counterproductive to have a state standard and not have a national standard, because whether you're in New York City or Grants Pass, Oregon, you know, algebra should be algebra, and you know, either you know what a quadratic equation is, and I long forgot how to do it. But the point is, it doesn't matter where you are in the country or, frankly, in the world about math standard. Now, maybe social sciences, or, you know, there's things that change by region, but some of these things shouldn't.
Yeah. Well, Achieve recently. Oh, again, Mark Fraser for the record with Achieve. Achieve recently produced a report that found that there is a body of standards that are common across state lines, and that has come from the ground up as folks have realized that there is something called the global economy, that as they've needed to tighten their alignment with post-secondary and awareness that there aren't such differences always the way there used to be between state economies. I mean, there are some similarities. The federal government right now, with the stimulus money and the Race to the Top fund, is looking at putting out a significant amount of revenue for states that sign on to having common standards that will likely be aligned with Achieve's ADP benchmarks, the American Diploma Project benchmarks. I know that your state superintendent was just in a conversation about that, I think as recently as yesterday, to understand what the opportunities are. They haven't been fully defined yet, but there's a growing awareness, exactly as you say, Representative Moyer, of the relevance of having commonality along those lines.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Comp.
Can I give you the negative side of that, Representative Maurer? The negative side of being assessed statewide with the same common standards, whether it's through this Achieve program or other programs. I would hate to be the state that's now left behind, not the child that's left behind when you do, if you do a national assessment and then you have the green states and the red states or whatever color you want to be, and that there's this common expectation that all states will be the same. So I've struggled with this concept of national standards versus individual state standards.
To rebut that in those, you know, we and it has to be focused on areas of hard science, that we are so behind as a nation in these areas of math and science and engineering that, you know what, I'm sorry, if Oregon isn't up to the snuff, then we need to know that. And, you know, and then you make changes based on that. I just think that at some point we have to, you know, stop kidding ourselves and say, let's measure ourselves against everybody else. And that, unfortunately, things like the SAT and the ACT, you know, kind of, they help you norm yourself against the national standard. But it's not really where our focus needs to be. It needs to be local, lower levels.
Yeah. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is, as everybody knows, a really big problem with regard to just having the people trained who can teach the stuff well at high school and middle school level. Math is one that has intrigued me for years, and the fact that we spend so much time doing irrelevant teaching. We factor equations, quadratic equations, I'll go back to yours. We use factoring to solve them, and there aren't any problems out there in real life that ever are factorable. I mean, you need to use the quadratic formula. So one thing that these states getting together can do, and I hope we keep watching them, is they start finding out what stuff do we take 2 and 3 weeks of school time, which we shouldn't be spending 2 or 3 weeks of time. We should get to teaching the real concepts that they need to know so they can solve the problem, and how to pick from this list of mathematical formulas which one works, I mean, for a particular problem. And we haven't done a very good job of that in this country for a long time, my opinion. And hopefully having these conversations and this national conversation will start to narrow it down. Europe and Russia and a lot of these other countries got to this a lot sooner than we did. Their books, I love some of their math books in comparison to ours. Hopefully the people making the textbooks won't define the curriculum as they have in this country for years, and we'll get to a point where we actually teach what we need to teach. But I applaud you, because I think that's what this organization is about, and I think it's what Oregon's been trying to do. So it's just frustrating to me to see how long it takes to make the changes necessary.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Dennis.
Madam Chair, Chell Gelzer, members of the committee, I want to thank Representative Moore and others for their comments. Achieve has made it possible for states to come together and get beyond the top-down conversation and to have the conversation. First, it started with 5, and then it was 8 or 9 for a year, and now there's more, where on some of those subject areas, what are the absolute necessities? What do we need to have? And Achieve has done some work, and they may speak to it if you want them to, where those states that are going that direction are beginning to be, their benchmark is actually pretty close to the international benchmark that you're talking about. It may even be aligned. We weren't able to get there in the last 2 years as we pivoted away from the voluntary SimCam system to a diploma system, but it's a two-step process, I think, for us, and it is within our sights. And so I want to be clear about where we hope to go, even if we're not currently on the leading edge.
Thank you. Further questions?
Bringing it all in.
Well, thank you.
Well, Catherine is going to give her elements.
Yes, you had a presentation too, correct?
No. Oh, no.
No, no,
no.
Oh,
no.
All right.
Well, then I have a
question. So you do have a question.
Yes, thank you.
Last chance, Representative Dimbro.
Yes, well, I'm not sure this is a question so much as a comment. I really applaud those schools that are, those states that are, looking at 4 years of math, actually, as opposed to 3 years. You know, one of the challenges that we face in this country is, you know, at best, we ask students to work really hard for their first 3 years of high school, and then a lot of times we give people a pass for their senior year, whereas most countries do the reverse. Right, the last year of high school, students are really, really working hard. So when they're ready to go to university, they're exhausted, and sometimes they have a hard time making that transition because they're so exhausted. But they come with really strong skills generally, whereas students who are coming to college here, often it's been at least 2 years since they've had math, and they end up not doing that well on their placement tests. They place calling for remediation, which is really not surprising. I think that we just need a real change in the way that we're approaching that senior year, and requiring 4 years of the core subjects, I think, is a key part of that.
Thank you. There are further questions. Representative Roblin.
Thank you again, Madam Chair. Have you noticed in the states that start to up their math? Because one of the problems we had when we were having this discussion a couple of years ago was that we don't have the teachers. We're having a hard time finding the math teachers when we had 2-year requirements. How are we going to find them when there's 3? Same with science. And so we've got all these other states that have got out there in front. Are they having the same problem getting the people? Because I'm hopeful if President Obama does put the stuff in. We had a problem in the 50s and 60s, and we had a national call to our action, which the federal government led and started helping train math and science people. Personally, I think we're ready for that again. But are they still having the same problems with that we considered having about getting the teachers they need for these extra requirements?
Again, Mark Fraser with Achieve. Pretty much every state is struggling with having enough math and science teachers. Some are prioritizing, I think, more effectively than other states. I can tell you that California has a specific goal, 10,000 new teachers over the next 10 years, and there's kind of a role for government, there's a role for philanthropy, there's a role for business. Everybody's pitching in, but there's a specific target that they're working toward, and they're recruiting from Oregon. And, you know, it's a matter of providing, you know, doing some things that might be different than we've done in the past. It could be financial incentives, could be appealing to folks at a point in time that's different than districts have been hiring. The New Teacher Project is a group that nationally has looked at when people are hired, and the hiring cycle is just out of sync with, so some districts are greatly disadvantaged. So it is a whole ecosystem itself, suffice it to say. I can tell you in Washington State that 27 of 28 institutions are undersubscribed in math and science teacher preparation programs. And I suspect it's probably similar in Oregon. And it's just a matter of doing some things differently to get different results. And everybody's aware that that is a problem. And focusing, again, in greater degrees of productivity on the solution.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Gale. So that does raise a question about shortages. And I know in rural areas, labor pools are pretty shallow. And I guess that would be one of the things that I would like to know at some point in time about our teachers and where we're short and what areas are short. Because I'm worried that rural Oregon probably is going to be shortest of all.
Representative
Maurer. I'm sorry. This is a unique opportunity. And you shifted the subject. But I attended a conference, like many of us do as a legislator, back in Virginia. And it stunned me to talk to legislators, because there were a lot of legislators from the East Coast at this conference. And they were talking about how the shortages of teachers, and particularly math and science, and that they were hiring from overseas to come to the U.S. to be math and science teacher. And I was stunned. I said, we don't have that problem in Oregon. I mean, and I'm wondering, you know, is Oregon unique? I mean, we have many people applying for teacher's jobs in the districts that I'm familiar with. There's not a shortage, per se, but of course, nationally, it's different. I mean, how does Oregon rank or in this whole conversation? Maybe not Oregon, but what's the national picture?
In terms of teachers?
Well, the national picture, again, Mark Fraser, the national picture is that we're typically oversubscribed in elementary education and undersubscribed in math and science teachers. And some places like New York, Atlanta, and Los Angeles are trying to bring new candidates in to the pipeline through alternative routes and recruitment. The challenge is to have low barriers to entry but still high quality. That's the trick to do that. There's also retraining of existing teachers, right, or bringing back folks. I don't know. Ed, I'm sure, can speak to your own data, but I suspect you do have a shortage here.
Madam Chair, Representative Moore, I'd like to, if I could, I'll either come talk to you individually, or if we have another opportunity to speak to you, we can lay out some work that we've done. We've done with the Quality Ed Commission, changing the way they do their work, looking at what it costs to do things, not so much what, you know, what the big number in the sky is, but what it costs to do certain things. We've costed this out, and we can come in and talk to you a little bit about that. A lot of it is about retraining our existing staff. We don't currently have as much of a problem statewide, although I think it is, as Representative Van Orman talked about, more of a problem in some parts of the state to get highly qualified, and I don't use the federal definition there, I mean high-quality educators for some of these subject areas. So I have people who've done a lot of work on this. We could come in and talk to you more. We've looked at what's happened in some other states and how much their higher ed system appears to be able to respond in a short period of time, and there seems to be some capacity there to meet some of this need, and then the rest, we think, for our needs can be met by taking the folks that we've got and getting them the tools that they need to do the jobs. So, but I've got folks who could speak at more length on this subject.
Thank you, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to, I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge Christine Tell, who was one of my mentors a long time ago. So we sent her off to Washington, D.C., but they keep stealing Oregon people all over the place. So it's great to have you here visiting.
Thank you,
Christine.
Representative Roblin.
Representative Roblin, it's refreshing to meet one of your mentors as opposed to one of your students.
<That's true. laughs>
You did well.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark or Ed, I'm not sure which one, but to get beyond the need for teachers and into industry and states' economies, the states that are ahead of us, are we starting to see this play out with industry investigating those states and looking to locate there because of the required higher math skills? Is that starting to play itself out?
Virginia.
Mark Fraser with Achieve. It absolutely is.
Yep.
It's a real factor from a couple of angles. One is having the pipeline for the workforce directly. But secondly, the quality of life and the level of expectation that knowledge workers want for their families. So going to some place that has a strong education system is a recruitment advantage.
Christine Tell for the record. Representative Huffman, a good example, I think, of a state making this connection to the future economy is Michigan. A few years ago, Michigan had only one course required for high school graduation, and that was civics. Michigan has now introduced the Michigan Merit program, high school graduation diploma, that does require mathematics through Algebra 2, 4 years of English, very rigorous level of coursework. Within, I believe it's slightly over 11% unemployment rate. The governor, Governor Granholm, who was on the Achieve board, said this is our economic investment. Is our students. We have to reinvent the auto industry. This is how we're going to do it.
Yep.
So there's a direct connection there in that state's particular plan.
Follow-up, Madam
Chair.
Just out of curiosity, they do still require civics, right? Hopefully.
Yes, Representative Huffman, they do.
Chair Gelser, Representative Huffman, some of you know I have another hat I wear sometimes at night. I'm a city councilor for the city of Hillsboro, and I hear about it regularly from folks who are looking and folks who are there. Very concerned. They hear about it from their employees. They think about it when they think about where to site. I'm not sure if we're at that competitive disadvantage yet or to what degree that we are or are not, but if we can't keep up with where the rest of the nation is going, it'll certainly exacerbate there, not to mention, of course, the international competition. And I think many more Oregonians are beginning to get that sense of what the national competition means. And certainly people around where I live get the international piece. But I'm not sure we're really there as a whole, as a population. When I go back to Achieve and I'm interacting with 30 or 40 other leaders from other states, the states that are really charging hard here are the ones that perceive we're on top and we're going to stay on top, we're going to be the best, and we're going to keep being the best. And the ones like Michigan, where the bottom has fallen out and it's this is all they got left. They got to try to turn it around. And then, frankly, I talk to people like Wisconsin and some others where there's this little bit of a sense where they're kind of like us, where there's this sense of, we're pretty good, we're above average, what's the rush? What are you so worried about? And frankly, it creates an interesting dynamic for us here, a challenge.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your generous presentation today. It was very helpful and useful. But please don't go away, because Representative Parker has something he wants to say.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for being late. I did see much of and hear much of what went on from my room as I was taking care of something urgent, but I still apologize for being so late. As a guy who grew up, finished high school in Ann Arbor, Michigan, at a time when education was pretty strong there, I know what you're talking about. I also can't pass up a chance to say something in response to what you just said, which is, what are we, a third world state? It's the way I feel a lot of times here lately in terms of these statistics that keep coming in. It's my mantra on the committee here.
Thank you, Representative. And thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Take care. And I'm going to close the informational hearing. Representative Dimbrough, do you have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move that we suspend the rules. In order to allow Representative Parker to vote on House Bill 2871 and House Bill 2111.
Representative Dimbrough moves that we suspend the rules to allow Representative Harker to vote.
Can we have
Are there any objections?
Oh,
is there a discussion?
No.
No? Seeing no objection? No objection. How do you vote, Representative Harker?
It's really tempting, but aye and aye.
Thank you very much. And the record will reflect that. And I hope that your records will reflect that on this date, the House Education Committee adjourned at 2 o'clock.
I know.
And we'll do the wave.
And the House Education Committee adjourned.
We can do the wave.